Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Hello, my name is Kay Thompson, and this is Kay Thompson Live. And I'm trying to find some place where to put my my peppermint at this particular point. Don't laugh at me, Byron.
I'm not laughing.
I am with Byron Saunders, or he is with me, and he is sitting in again and co-hosting with me.
Yes.
And so glad to have you.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
As I earlier stated, you know, this is the one-year anniversary. This is how it all started.
Uh-huh.
I was on your show.
Mm-hmm.
You were interviewing me. I thought I was only going to do 5 minutes of Black history, and it ended up being a whole hour, and you interviewed me. And 1 year later,
excuse me,
I'm back with you.
Listen, I'm not dumb. I recognize, you know, when you were saying some things about Black history, I said, what?
So, thank
yeah,
you.
So thank you for, you know, sitting in with me.
And to celebrate with you.
Yeah, to celebrate God. Black History Month.
Yes.
And William Loren Katz is on. And hi, Bill. How are you? Bill Katz.
Who else is on with us?
Byron Saunders. You know Byron.
Byron. Okay, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, yes, Bill.
And how are you?
I'm blessed. Thank you so much.
Well, Bill Katz is quite a writer. He has written over 40 books and loads of other things about periodicals, papers, everything. And you're in a lot of museums and schools and everything all around the country, right, Bill?
Yes.
How did you get started in writing African-American history, by the way?
Well, you don't want to ask that question at the beginning of a short program. I mean, just briefly, I grew up in an unusual family where my father had a deep interest first in Black music and then Black culture and Black history. So I'll leave it at that. Sometime if you want, we can go into it.
Yeah, well, I understand. Just to get a little bit more, you know, about the Black culture, Black music, he was interested in jazz, I understand.
Yeah, that's exactly
what
it was. So I got to meet people like Sidney Bechet and James P. Johnson and even a niece of Bessie Smith in our living room.
And there's no kidding, really. Wow.
Yeah.
In your living
room. That's for real.
Yeah. Well, yes, we will talk about that another time. But you know one thing, Bill? I've interviewed you several times. Now, I'm still waiting for my other copy of Eyewitness News, because you know I use that. And by the way,
Eyewitness News
by Bill Katz is something, and I'm talking to all the educators out there now. Those people in New Jersey specifically who should be including the Amistad legislation. We had Bill Payne on, you know, last week.
Yes.
And that legislation was passed by the New Jersey State Assembly. And it is illegal not to teach African-American history as part of world history in the state of New Jersey. So I advocate that if it's not being taught and nobody's paying attention and it's not being monitored correctly, sue the State Department of Education. So what do you think about that, Bill?
Well, obviously something should be done, and it's an incredible thing that after the legislation is passed that the law is violated. I mean, we knew for many years this was something shoved under the rug. Well, for example, when I was teaching in New York city schools many years ago, only one day was devoted to Black history, and it wasn't even really Black history. You were just told to mention, you know, maybe one or two famous African-American leaders and let it go at that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all it was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, listen, you in Eyewitness News, that covers a lot of different times. Tell us a little bit about that book, that specific book.
Yeah, well, Eyewitness.
This is for the educators. Now, they're looking for something that they have got to use as a basic text. I say Eyewitness.
Yeah.
What do you say?
No, I think it's fine. And it is still used in some places, and it should be in most major libraries. It's a rather thick book. It's the kind you don't want to drop on your foot. And it starts in Africa, and it goes up to the present day. And what it covers is the story of not just famous people of African descent, but the large body of people who moved through the warp and woof of history and what they did. Some of them are cowboys, some of them are slave runaways, some become diplomats. It's the whole story, and it is arranged, actually, because I wrote it when I was a teacher of 14 years. It's arranged to fit in the U.S. history curriculum. So the chapters are easily arranged. Like, you know, one of the chapters will be the colonial period. Another chapter will be the Great Depression or the Civil War, the Reconstruction. So teachers, you know, easily know where to slot the information, which is all on what African Americans were doing at this time, but the material that's been left out of their usual textbooks. And it comes with two other things that I'm quite proud of. One of them is comes with what I call eyewitness accounts at the end of each chapter that the teacher can use so the students can feel like they are there at that period of time with somebody who's living and telling the story. And also I use pictures from my famous photograph and engraving collection, you know, to take the reader back to that exact time.
Now, has that been offered in the school system throughout the country, or is it only in some areas, or is it at all offered and being taught?
I can't speak for now, but when it first came out, it became a major text. Matter of fact, a Publishers Weekly called it this may be the up-and-coming kind of textbook, because it did mix narrative, which I wrote, of course, with actual people who were there talking and photographs showing the times. And a lot of textbooks have copied that ever since then. I can't answer very well where it's being used these days. It's been out of print. I'd be happy to get another publisher for it. But it's been out of print a number of years now.
Mm-hmm. And if educators and anyone else really wanted to get that book, where can they get it? They can go online, Amazon or something?
Oh, yeah. No, they can go online. You can get copies online. And, I have some, but they're just, if teachers get in touch with me and they want classroom sets, I send them out. But I can't deal with sending individual copies.
How can they get in touch with you? Because I want to talk about your new book, Black Indians. So how can they get in touch with you, Bill?
Oh, well, first of all, they can go to my website, both on what I'm going to be talking about today on Black Indians or about any other matter, and they can read about my essays. They can read the essays there or look at the books. And the website is WilliamLKatz, K-A-T-Z, .com. And there are sections there of my essays, which are, you know, free to read. People can run them off, use them. Material on my lectures that I give around the country, museums, libraries, and so on. And all kinds of other material. There are even some pictures there that show the kind of research that I've been doing over these many decades.
Bill, why isn't your book in circulation in any of the educational systems? I mean, for a book that has gotten and garnered such rave, seems to me, if we could still have Siege, Dick and Jane play and run, why can't we have your book included into the system? What are we not doing that? Perhaps maybe it's something we can spearhead to get it back into publication and back into the schoolrooms.
Well, that's, first of all, the nicest thing I've heard all day. I don't quite know how to answer your question, but if you ever have me on again, I'd like to give that some thought, because I would love to have it back. And when it was in, it was really a loved book by both students and teachers, because I kept hearing from them over and over again all kinds of communications of how much they enjoyed it, how it made their lessons creative, how students used it for homework and so on. I don't know how one the question goes back to the publishers. It's what they wish to publish and what they think will sell. I think they make major mistakes. For example, I brought out a book called Black Women of the Old West. Kay, I don't know if you ever saw that.
I have that.
It's a kind of a knockout book. It's 100 pages of beautiful photographs and stories of black women heroes of the Old West. Cowboys, Indians, sheriffs, all of this.
Yeah.
And that book just recently went out of print. I cannot explain that. Well, I thought that would be a perennial.
You see, Byron also, and Bill, the reason that they're not his books are not, you know, properly talked about because people don't know about them. And some people will not recommend them. Now, Bill has written over 40 books on African-American history.
Yeah.
And what we're going to be talking about tonight also is his brand new book on Black Indians. That's got some information in there that we didn't even know.
Right.
And also, like, I know you were talking about, you were telling me one time, Bill, about the Underground Railroad that went south. I didn't even know about
yes.
that. So if you can
yes.
on Black Indians right now, why did, how'd you happen to write that book?
Well, I had done a book called The Black West, which,
yeah.
by the way, also just recently went out of print
oh,
after 30, 40 years in print.
We have to
and,
talk
in,
over there, to, you know. Kiss.
In what?
Bob Pickett.
Bill Pickett, right.
Yeah. About his grandfather, great-grandfather, Bill Pickett,
right.
Bulldogger.
Oh, I see, right, okay.
Boy, and he was a bulldog.
Yeah, he was a mixture of African and Cherokee.
Uh-huh.
And his whole family. Actually, I have a very rare picture of him and his brothers in the new edition of Black Indians that was
You're
sent
kidding,
to
really?
Me by one of his kinfolk, still living, a great cousin living out in the Bill Pickett Ranch still.
Amazing.
Out in Oklahoma.
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Amazing.
But
he know that?
Yeah.
Does he know that? Does Bill know that? Not Bill. Does Bob Pickett know that?
Yeah.
Bill Katz. Does Bob Pickett know that?
I don't know who Bob Pickett is.
You know, he is the great-great-great-grandson of Bill Pickett.
Oh, okay. I haven't met him. I've met other members of the Pickett family.
He's over there at KISS. He's on BLS. He's on BLS.
KISS is no longer
Like LIV. But anyway, I'm going to tell him, you know, if he doesn't know that. Yeah, because, you know, I've been following, you know, the exploits of the Black Indians for a number of years. Not the exploits, but, you know, the old history of it.
Sure.
Absolutely fascinating. All that about the Black Rodeo and the Black Cowboys and their importance to the taming of the West and the building of the railroads. It's a fascinating history.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
So, see, what for me is very important is getting those books back into
that's
circulation.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
We have got to spearhead that effort because what's out there in our public education system right now pales to insignificance what you have written, Mr.
Right.
Katz. Okay. Let's be honest. What they're getting is such a marginalized piece of information that it's almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have
given
to us is a chance to know more.
Exactly.
And it should be in the system. So we've got to do something to help out make this possible.
I want to agree with you on a particular point that you said about the material that the students are getting now. I was teaching school, and I developed the materials for my eyewitness with my students, and I was using these materials, and in a sense I was kind of testing them to see how they'd respond. And I would give out the material, say we'd be studying the Civil War, and I'd give out the chapter I wrote on this. So this was before it was a book. Give out in dittoed sheets, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And the students just, they were entranced by it. It wasn't just the subject matter, but it was written in a way that appealed to them as students, that took their knowledge and their lack of knowledge into consideration. And the other thing that I found, I'd like to emphasize this for a moment, is that the black students responded to it, yes, but so did the white students.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the white students responded to it because they finally felt they were getting the inside story, that the white students were not happy with just studying about famous generals and presidents and heads of corporations and inventors who most of them could not identify with because they were, like most of us, ordinary people.
Okay.
And here we're, okay, although it was black people I was talking about, it was people they could understand and identify with.
Yeah. Bill, you know one thing? We're going to be going for a break in just about 30 seconds. But when we come back, I want you to start telling us about some of the key things that we should really look for or that's in Black Indians that you think will be, you know, items of extreme interest, you know, to people in the school system. And I think we're just about ready to go for this break right now. Are we, Shauna? So, Shauna Glover is in there in the control room, and everything is fine. We'll be right back, everyone. K-Tom's Alive with Bill Katz and Byron Saunders, who just got off the air.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
Yes, we are back. I'm Kay Thompson, and we're dealing with news, information, and education, and you know, and also communication issues, you know, from the global standpoint. You know,
right.
We're heard all over,
not only
locally, nationally, but
globally. Yes.
Don't you love it?
I'm indeed
yeah.
intrigued by that.
I remember when I was interviewing Donald Penn, congressman who passed not too long ago, and he would call from all different places in the world, and I would be shocked that, you know, we are really heard in these places. And plus with Rick G down there in Fort Lauderdale, down there in Florida. He's having, as a matter of fact, Giacomo, I think his name is Gates.
Giacomo
Gates,
mm-hmm.
for his annual jazz festival down there. Bill Katz, you may want to go to Florida for a short period of time for this great jazz festival that's going to be held down there. We're going to have on the air.
Good.
But anyway, go through some of the stuff that we can find in the Black Indian book.
Well, the thing I found when I did Black Indian that people did not know, and this is, I mean, you talk about things that are important for the schools and teachers and students. These were our first freedom fighters. Africans and Native Americans teamed up and formed our first Rainbow Coalition. And they fought the invaders. They fought the European invaders, whether they were from Spain or Portugal or England or France or Holland. And they fought them, and they kept fighting them, and this combination of these two people of color shaped the first 200 years of the American continents after Columbus landed, because there was a continual battle. The Europeans, of course, and this is important, tried to enslave the Native Americans first, and when they died off or ran away back to their villages, they then brought in the Africans. So when the Africans came in, the Native Americans, looking over the hedges, looking at the plantations, they saw that here were Africans being forced to do the slave labor. They had fled. And you know, one thing you know, an enemy of your enemy is your friend.
Mm.
So when Africans fled or were encouraged to flee by Native Americans, they were taken into Native American villages all the way up from Canada down to the tip of South America. And this was a very important thing, involved hundreds of thousands of people. It went on for 200 or so years, all during the slave era. And it's an important part of our history, and it's left out.
Yeah.
It can't be left out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've been told that the Holocaust of the Native American Indians in this country was over 100 million lost.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're right. We don't have the exact figures, but it was the greatest Holocaust that we know of in all history.
Wow.
There's no doubt about it. It was systematic, it was unending, and it was widespread on a scale that far surpassed anything that happened in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that it really just blows the mind, the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
The Trail of Tears concept. I mean, we think of the West as stagecoaches. We think of the Pony Express, but we're talking about an entire nation of Indians
moved to
Oklahoma
right.
from Carolina
mm-hmm.
by foot, walking through perilous conditions, the winters, the storms, over the mountains, through the valleys, the dales, into territory that they were never familiar with.
Massacres
along the way.
Yes, and I would also add that among them were tens of thousands of people of African descent moved with them.
That's
and
right.
And were part of it. Yes.
The Seminoles, the Cherokees, all of which are some in my family.
Yeah, and in mine.
And that we know this happened,
mm-hmm,
and yet
mm-hmm.
can't even read a paragraph about it.
But when we talk to our grandparents.
Yes, they tell us.
They tell us. And then you know it. And then somebody will, I've heard somebody say on one of the radio stations, television station, that, you know, we all know that the stories of black Indians and African Americans as if it were not true.
I've been to Etowah Mounds in Georgia.
Yeah.
And to understand more about the Cherokee nation and it's amazing.
And Virginia.
And Virginia, exactly.
Thompson's are from.
So ultimately, Bill, your book, once again, I find an important opportunity for us to be a movement. Your books have got to get back into the system.
Yeah.
Let me just make one point in case the audience doesn't quite hear it right. The Black Indians is in print.
Yeah.
Black Indians is in print, and as a matter of fact, I just brought out a brand new expanded and updated edition that's 100 pages larger than the original.
Wow.
And it's out there. I believe I sent copies to Kay.
Yes.
And this is available. This can be purchased or... could be seen in the libraries, and you also can get a look at it at my website.
Mm-hmm. And your website.
In fact, I call my website the Black Indian website.
Okay. Okay. Now, what's the real name of it? Is that it, or what? The Black Indian website?
No, it's WilliamLKatz.com.
Okay. Is that a www before that?
Yes.
Okay. So www.williamlkatz.com.
William L. Katz.
William L.
Katz. .com. Okay. Listen, Bill, we're going to have to leave you, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Yeah.
And thank you very much, for getting us up to date. And we'll talk to you again and again.
Great talking to you.
Great talking.
Kay and Brian.
Yep. Okay.
Great talking.
Thank you so much. Okay. I learn something new every time I talk to you.
I appreciate it. Great talking to both of you.
Hey, Bill. Talk
Bye.
To you soon. Okay. Yeah, we want to thank Bill Katz. He's amazing. I've been interviewing him for years and years when I first started at WLIB. It was so fascinating, along with all the other authors of Us. You know, so really amazing. But we do have Glenda Taylor, who is an African-American female, who is one of the most brilliant women that I have talked to. Well, one of the most brilliant women. Glenda, are you there? Glenda?
Yes, I am.
Well, how are you, one of the most brilliant women that I have talked to?
I'm fine, and you?
Fine, thank you. Meet Byron Saunders. He's co-hosting with me here.
Good evening.
On my show, even though he doesn't have me on his show. That's okay. I'll fix him.
We're going to make that happen, for sure.
Glenda, listen. I have in front of me, you know what, the Jalamuso's drum. All right, we talked about before, right? And this is a book that Glenda has. Is a poet. She is brilliant. And this is one of her books, Truth and Illusion. This is a book of these pictures, old pictures.
Yeah.
Okay? Very little writings, just the pictures. You will get one picture after another.
Right.
You can see the look of your own family in these pictures, and they're of black women.
Okay.
Okay. And it's wonderful. All right. Now, Glenda has done a number of other books. The Jalamuso drum. Let me talk about that. What do you think a Jalamuso is, Byron?
You know, I don't know, and I really hadn't heard the term before, but I do know that she chronicles the lives of very important African-American women throughout history.
Okay.
So I do know that much about her.
So the next question is, all right, Glenda, tell us, what is the Jalamuso?
Well, the Jalamuso's drum is about African-American female artists, specifically entertainers, and it's an analysis of their autobiographies and how they use their autobiographies to record American history.
Okay.
And you call them a Jalamuso. What does a Jalamuso mean?
That's a word that's used in West Africa, specifically Mali, for cultural historian, griot, one who records history.
Yeah. Okay, now you have a...
Storyteller.
Go ahead.
Storyteller is another term that's used.
Okay. Now, you have a lot of women listed in here. You have Nina Simone. You have, Sissy Houston. You have,
Cicerita Jones.
Everybody.
I mean, you've got everybody,
you know,
in this book.
Absolutely everybody. Reason for you, know, Whoopi Goldberg. Bergen, you consider them griots. Eartha Kitt. Why? Why do you call them griots?
Yeah. Well, that's a term for cultural historians,
yeah.
And their books, their autobiographies. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Yeah, their autobiographies do an excellent job of recording American history from a perspective which is very unique, because we have to remember that all of them are basically international travelers,
mm-hmm.
and they're telling American history, they're telling their perspective of a particular time and history in which there's a very limited amount of knowledge of an African-American's perspective, but specifically an African-American female's perspective.
Right.
For
like the early, like in the 60s, the 1950s, the 30s, the 40s, depending on who it is, you know, Marian Anderson was born at the end of the 19th century, and most of the other ones were born between 1900 and 1955.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read their stories and their growing up, you learn a lot about American history that you would not necessarily get out of the average history book.
So that's why you're considering them Jalamusos, because of the fact that they are telling their history. What about those who have done international travel, like Eartha Kitt? And a few other people that...
Right. What you're finding is they're not just telling their history, but they're telling American history. Like, say, for example, Etta James, she said that when she came up, the word Ethiopian was used on the birth certificate instead of, it wasn't, you know, African-American at the time, or it said Ethiopian. And you learn things that you're not going to necessarily find out by just reading the average book. For example, Lena Horne and Eartha Kitt tells of their experiences during the Civil Rights Movement, during World War II, when Lena Horne had to perform and go to the soldiers and the segregation that occurred. Eartha Kitt talks about how she was blacklisted. She tells exactly what happened in the White House with Lyndon Johnson and the First Lady. And you learn a lot of different stories, and you find out about relationships. Like, say, for example, Lorraine Hansberry and Nina Simone were very good friends, and she's the person who introduced Nina Simone to everything in relationship to civil rights movement and African-American history and the movement.
Mm-hmm.
You
learn a lot of stories from them. They're not just telling their own individual stories. They're telling you, you know, American history,
yeah.
And behind-the-scenes information, because they were active participants in it. The same, like, for example, Marian Anderson tells you about the first March on Washington, which was in 1939, where she sang in front of the Lincoln Memorial because she was not allowed to perform in Constitution Hall,
yeah.
And Eleanor Roosevelt was one of the people who organized that event.
And also, on that note, to bring it a little current, Sissy Houston and Whitney performed there years later. As a matter of fact, I have that that album. And, where Whitney says to her mother, because both of them are on stage at Constitution Hall, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And Whitney said in their opening remarks that she was going to bring her mother up on stage, and she said this is the first time she felt so honored because she was the first black woman to perform at Constitution Hall since
Marian Anderson. And the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Who were a racist group, let's face it, okay?
Well, I agree with you in the stories that people like Eartha Kitt, because when I met Eartha, I was producing Timbuktu in Atlanta.
Wow,
I grew up in Washington, D.C., and when I saw Eartha, I said, Eartha, this was in private conversation, I said, Eartha, you are my shero. You came to Washington, D.C. and set it correct at the White House. I remember it so well.
Oh, my God.
And she sat there and told me the story. So I felt privileged to hear that from a first-person account.
Yeah.
And understand why she was blacklisted, And from her point of view, she said she would do it over again 1,000 times,
mm-hmm.
no matter what, because it was about setting the record straight.
So we have another walking history book right here, Glenn. Do you, Byron?
So thank you for sharing that story, because it's,
yeah.
it's so real to
yeah.
me. And then she appreciated it. When I told her that, she said, Byron, thank you for even acknowledging it. And then, of course, we talked about
yeah.
when she came to Martin Luther King's funeral.
Yes.
Because I remember calling up Ebenezer and saying, I've got Eartha Kitt in town. She wants to come to church. And they're saying, please let her come. Let her know she's welcomed anytime.
On that note, we're going to take a break. Glenda, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to find out more about what you think about Susie Houston and also Whoopi Goldberg. Okay, we will be right back. Byron, you're a historian.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
And we are back, everyone. We are back. We are with Glenda Taylor, who is an author and a writer. She has written The Jalamusa's Drum. She has also written another book of wonderful poetry called Black America Cried. And this is something that I'm going to look for when we talk to Glenda again, because this is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely a powerful book of poetry. And I can't say enough about this. You know, this is I'm just reading the whole thing.
Right.
And
right.
But I'm going to save that for another time. Now, Glenda, listen, I want to know, what did you find out? Now, Sissy has written her book, and she has another book out. Now, you were very impressed with Sissy, with the Family of the Drinkers, you know, the name of the Family of the Drinkers. And they're quite well known in New Jersey, specifically in Newark. And, you know, so tell us tell us more about that.
Well, Sissy's first book, How Sweet the Sound,
yes.
she does an excellent job of recording not just a family history, but she tells you a lot about the history of gospel music.
Yes.
And her story is a communal history, because she gives details of the migration from the South to the North.
Of her family.
And she, of her family's history, because they're from, I think it's Georgia. And she's very thorough. She's very detailed. She gives pictures, and you could see that she took care and time in doing her book.
Yeah.
Because she gives you a great deal of information, and a historian could easily, you know, verify the data, which is in her book. But she gives a lot of information.
Yeah, I interviewed her about that book. She had sent it to me some time ago, and when it first came out. And I interviewed her when I was working at New Jersey Network Television, and it was absolutely wonderful the way she had, you know, told the story of her and the powerful family that they are in the gospel church, you know, in gospel music, rather, in the church, you know, in Newark.
Right.
So mm-hmm. what else about Sissy were you impressed with?
Well, it was the book, and the top, because her book, a lot of books tell stories, but she focused on, she had a sense of history
yeah.
when she was writing it, and she gave you details and dates and times. She also talked about World War II and what was happening with the soldiers, how they were treated when they came back from World War II. She told you about her experiences driving through the South, because, you know, she was primarily raised in the North, so... She told you about her experience driving in the South and how she would go into, you know, like when they took trips, car trips, she and her husband, how he didn't really want to put himself through the humiliation of, you know, going into stores, the way they were treated. And she would go in and get the lunch and come out, you know, and didn't care that she was not supposed to go in.
Yeah, yeah.
And she told you a lot of the stories. Etta James does the same thing. They tell you experiences and stories. And, for example, Diana Ross is another person who, you know, we see her as the boss and, you know, very glamorous. But what she and the Motown era people went through, they were actually, you know, they went and did concerts, and then they had to run back on the buses because they were shot at because, you know, they were performing in, you know, segregated areas and areas where people of color were not supposed to be.
Hmm. What about Catherine Dunham? The dancer, Catherine Dunham?
Catherine Dunham is fascinating because she wasn't just a choreographer and a dancer. She was also an anthropologist.
Yes.
So Dunham has many books, and when she writes very aware that she's a scholar and an artist.
And an artist, yes.
And is very involved, which is attributed to her creativity and her stage performances and the rituals that took place in Haiti and, you know, different countries, Jamaica. Her first book was written, Journey to a Kampong, and she talks about Jamaica and the rituals, the religious rituals, the ceremonies. And she actually, against the will of her academic advisors, participated in many of the ceremonies, which, you know, they felt were dangerous.
Yeah.
They were dangerous. But she was very involved and determined to fully participate. And she records this in all of her autobiographical works. And she also wrote a novel in which she tells, you know, her stories.
Yeah, yeah. Now
she was really, really an amazing person and what she accomplished. And, you know, the number of countries that she went to.
Yeah, yeah. What about... let me see what about now. We talked about Diane Carroll. Diane Carroll. Now, you had mentioned Diane Carroll to me, prior to me reading the book, you know, because I had met her, you know, some years ago, you know, when she was, she was doing a play on Broadway, and I remember going to see it, you know, with some friends and whatnot, and I was so impressed. Glenda, hello.
Well, I'm here. Yeah, Diane Carroll, her books were The Legs of the Last to Go, and she tells her story, too.
Yeah.
She tells how Adam Clayton Powell's father is the one who married her parents, and she gives you the history of Harlem, and she tells you the building where W.E. Du Bois lived, and she gives a lot of information in her book. And she also, Whoopi Goldberg also mentions Diane Carroll in her autobiography called The Book, in which she tells how important Diane Carroll was to the African-American community at the time.
That's right.
When her show Julia came on.
Yes.
So you see that. I also remember Diane Carroll when she was in, remember she played the first black female Supreme Court justice? That was a very short-lived show on television.
No, I don't remember that. But, you know,
several years ago, she played that. But she writes a very entertaining autobiography.
But, you know, a lot of people...
And she does a very good job of discussing racism.
Yeah.
She talks about, like, open racism and subtle racism. And she actually gives you a definition of it because of some of the things that she experienced. And she does a very good job of... letting you know what happened in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s.
Now, what about, you know, people talk about Diane Carroll, you know, as being, you know, very one of the first black women, you know, with those kind of parts, you know, right, on television. But people forget about Gail Fisher. Remember Matt?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this
she was the first to have, you know, be like this lead female.
That's right.
Julia.
Maddox.
I remember Gail Fisher. Really good.
Yeah, I knew her quite well. She was from Rahway, New Jersey, as a matter of fact. And she lived on Well, the people from Rahway will remember this. She lived on a street. The name of the street was Potter's Crossing in Rahway, New Jersey.
Yes, I remember.
And she became one of, what's the name, Ophelia DeVore's models.
Oh, okay.
And as I did during that particular time. We were kids.
But what's really important is what, I think Katz was on a little earlier and you were asking him about getting books into the schools. Yeah. That's very important because there's so many stories and, you know, young people would love to read these stories. Mm-hmm. Because it, like the stories about the black Indians and, you know, when you read the autobiographies of not just the females, but the male entertainers also, you know, these are people who you're familiar with their music, you're familiar with their song, but you're hearing stories which are all connected and interrelated. For example, Nina Simone tells the story of how when Meg Evers died and what inspired her to write Mississippi Goddamn was when she found about the, you know, four little girls dying.
Yes.
But you're hearing these stories and these little threads, and you know that she knew Andrew Young and Langston Hughes, and this person is connected with that person, and Lena Horne gives you information, and she has a wonderful book. And her daughter also does a good job, because her daughter writes the biography of the Horne family.
Mm-hmm.
And they can trace their history back to the late 19th century.
Wow.
Similar to Missy Houston does. And the daughter does really, Gail Lummett, she does a really very good job of tracing her mother's history back and telling you the story of the family. And she's collected the newspaper articles, because Lena Horne comes from a family in which, you know, they had politicians and they had all types of different, they were part of the 10%, the black bourgeoisie, early 20th century.
Yeah.
So you learn a lot about that class of people during that period by reading her book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as I was the director, executive director at the Queens Historical Park Society in Queens, New York City, we also understood the importance of Addersley Park, which was the community in which many of these entertainers lived in Queens,
mm-hmm.
that could not or would not be accepted in Manhattan, but found an oasis in Queens, which they built very beautiful homes, and Lena was part of that community. So there's much that we can and should be seeing in our history books, even if it's just local history.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I was reflecting
and
about...
And what they went through during that
right.
time.
I was reflecting on how Eartha Kitt and how Eartha shared with me a story about her at Spelman College. And
yes.
Ultimately, because Spelman was known to only enroll very light-skinned, fair-skinned African-American
mm-hmm.
women,
mm-hmm.
that she almost didn't get in because she was considered to be too dark.
Isn't something? Boy, oh boy.
That's right.
All right. Time for a break. We'll be right back. Not yet? Not yet? Give you what? 2-3 minutes? 3 minutes to time for a break. So we have 3 minutes. Okay, Tati. All right. So go ahead.
So is that where Louis Armstrong's home is?
Louis Armstrong's home is in
Corona.
Corona. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's not... as a historic landmark, it's really its significance is not the architectural design, because it's pretty much a bit like all the other homes there, but it's because he lived there and
mm-hmm.
made renovations to the home. And of course, on the weekends, Sundays, he was very well known to open his backyard and invite the neighbors to come in for a little impromptu concert.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful home inside. It's almost like walking through a retro
1960s. Is that part of St. Albans or what?
No, that's St. Albans is near Addersley Park in Jamaica, South Jamaica, Queens. But Corona is basically right off of Northern Boulevard over in that area, East Corona and Corona, not too far from Jackson Heights.
Right yeah. That area of Edgecombe Avenue, I understand there was an apartment building there that housed a lot of media people and musicians and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rich history in this city that we need to share.
Harlem itself is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of Mama I Want to Sing with Vi Hickenson, you know, and all that, you know, stemming from the gospel music and gospel church. I was privileged to, you know, and so happy to have played the role of one of the narrators for a short period of time.
I was on the road with them for 6 weeks.
No kidding? Were you there when I was there?
No.
Oh.
But this is in the Chitlin Circuit. But Doris
Doris was
there.
Yeah, my sister.
Yes.
Yeah. I went and I tried out, and Gary was on, and also Hazel was on,
right.
And
yeah.
I was filling in for somebody, but I absolutely enjoyed it.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, I love the music so much, Glenda, that I started dancing in the booth, and I thought the booth was going to come down. But anyway.
You know, The two of you sound like walking cultural historians.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, you know, we can remember certain things happening, you know, a long period of time, long time ago. And the exciting thing about this is that you remember it and you have written about it.
That's right.
Glenda, so you know, I know about your other books also, so and so much that you have been privy to. For instance, if you talked about the Black Church, I'm quite sure that you have stories about that. Right now, guess what? It is time for a break. We'll be right back. My name is Kay Thompson, and this is Kay Thompson Live, and I am with
Byron C. Saunders.
And also with Glenda Taylor, famous poet, famous writer, amazing historian.
Amazing.
And a brilliant woman.
Absolutely.
Stay with us, everyone. We will be right back.
Tune into the GoPro Radio Network for an exciting lineup of shows. On Wednesdays at 6 p.m., it's the Eco-Socialist Horizons Hour with Joel Cavell, Ben Barson, and S.P. Whelan, your only source for connecting the dots between militarism, imperialism, climate change, and ecological crisis. Then at 7 p.m., it's the BCS Experience with Byron C. Saunders, history, art, culture, and politics in review and discussion. Then at 8 p.m., it's the Kay Thompson Show, giving you a closer look at the business, art, and politics of New Jersey. And last but not least, this is Ayanna Jones at 9 p.m., discussing all things creative, political, and creatively political, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. www.goproradio.com.
You're back on Kay Thompson, and this is the name of the show, is Kay Thompson Live, as it used to be, Kay and Gus Show. And my partner, Gus Henningberg, died a few months ago, let's just put it that way, and his spirit is here.
Still with us.
Yeah. He was a funny person, and he had quite a sense of humor, along with him being very serious and changing things in Newark, by the way, and also in the state. It was because of Gus that the construction companies had to be integrated because, you know, when you're seeing these construction companies, especially here in the Northeast, they never had any black workers, not any Latino workers, no female workers,
right.
Okay?
Right.
So no Asian workers.
Closed shop.
A closed shop. But in the South, you know, see, the Southern states aren't union states.
Right to work.
You see? But then Gus was responsible for the affirmative action legislation regarding construction in the state of New Jersey. So any publicly financed building in the state of New Jersey, if it doesn't have an integrated workforce, the construction.
Was it 30%?
I don't remember the percentage.
It usually started off at that.
And yeah.
It's kind of been working its way south since then. But you're right. That's a mandate.
Yeah, a mandate now. That's right. And that was about four or five years ago. And he, Larry Goldman, who was the former director of New Jersey Performing Arts Center, you know, he said because of Gus, they didn't have a lot of problems, any problems with the construction group because of the fact that they had to be integrated. So that was built by the people.
Exactly.
And it was for the people. That was the reason that I think Governor Thomas Kane wanted it in Newark because he said it was a community. You know, there's some people who see things a little better. Right, Ms. Glenda?
Glenda? Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right, and we can't forget about Positively Black
right.
back in the day.
That's exactly. right. That's right. And Gil, you know, Like It Is. Yeah, as a matter of fact,
right.
it was because of Gil that I had gotten to interview Dr. Ben, Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen, on a number of times. So on television and also from WLIB, you know, Dr. Ben was a regular, and I think that he's still alive,
yeah.
and
yeah.
I think he just turned 95 or 96. Yeah. Do you know? Yeah,
wow.
About that age.
Yeah, about that age, yeah. And he used to sit out and buy Schomburg Center there, you know, Schomburg Museum, you know. So.
Yeah, there's a book called When and Where I Enter,
yes.
which is an excellent book, and a lot of people don't know about that book. It's written by Paula Giddings, and it's an amazing, amazing story of the role of African-American women in American history, and it's called When and Where I Enter. And when you pick up that book and start reading it, you will not be able to put it down.
Yeah, When and Where I Enter. I knew there was something that I've been trying to think about for the longest period of time. But you know one thing? I want you to touch on the importance of Whoopi Goldberg. Okay, Glenda?
Whoopi Goldberg, she's brilliant. She's a brilliant actress and comedian. And I just saw the show she did, the 20th anniversary show. I just re-looked at the video because I saw it live. But Whoopi Goldberg is a trailblazer because I remember when she did The Color Purple and they were saying, you know, she did such a great job. She got nominated for the award.
Power.
Like, what is Hollywood going to do with Whoopi Goldberg?
Mm-hmm.
And she has made her mark because Whoopi Goldberg is one of the few people who's won an Oscar, a Grammy, a Tony, and Emmy Awards.
Right.
Exactly.
So she has made her mark. She produces, you know, television programs. She's on The View. She's on radio. She's done over 150 films. I mean, you know, she's written her books.
Yeah.
She's proven that, you know, there was a place for her.
Yeah.
And she's made a statement that if you have a dream and you want to accomplish it, that then you have the kind of genius that she has. Because even when you see her on The View and you listen to her talk and you just see how she's, you know, she's a part of the group and she listens. And then when she says something, when something comes out of her mouth and she makes a statement, it's significant.
Yes, yeah, and she waits. And she listens.
Mm-hmm. She waits.
You know,
she listens, so you can see. And plus, the woman is just a great actress.
Yeah.
From The Color Purple, so that other one she did, I think it was The Associate. She's really, really, you know, just a great actress. In addition to, you know, being a superb comedian.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. There's a couple of other people that I wanted you to touch on before we go. Pearl Primus. Pearl Primus married Percival Bourdais. And he was a dancer, if I remember correctly. And she had, they traveled in Africa, I understand. And they, I think Percy was the, Percival Bourdais, her partner, or her husband rather, was one of the few people to learn the Watusi warrior dance.
Whoa.
That was in King Solomon's mind.
Yeah.
Do you remember the one with the swords and whatnot?
Yeah.
And I remember the High School of Needles and Trades in the Village. Do you remember that?
No, I wasn't aware of that one.
Uh-oh.
That's when it got by me.
Okay. That's when it got by you. But anyway, I remember when Percival Bourdais performed that dance after they had come back from wherever they were in Africa. And with his spears and, you know, with the long steps of the...
Very,
I think it was the top two.
Yeah,
and I always remember that and taught it in my dance studio after I stole Alvin Ailey's choreography. Did you know that? Glenda, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Or did you know I stole Alvin Ailey's choreography?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now she tells the truth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Well, that was during the days that we had the Thompson Dance Studio, which was the only black-owned and operated dance studio and preschool in New Jersey. And I saw Alvin when he first choreographed it, and then I must have seen it about 100 times. As a matter of fact, Gus had asked me, he said, how can you enjoy this? He said, if you have seen it so frequently,
every
time. Every single time. Revelations was,
right.
You know. I mean,
and one of my dearest friends, Bruce.
Uh-huh.
Bruce Douglas, not Bruce Douglas. Bruce was this huge.
I know, Bruce Hawkins.
Bruce, who was, 300 pounds. Was the photographer.
Bruce Hawkins was 300 pounds?
Yeah. Not the dancer, Bruce.
No, I was talking about the dancer,
but the photographer for Alvin Ailey in the early years was a friend of mine from Hampton and a dear friend, good actor.
Yeah.
And he was their main photographer.
Wow.
And so whenever he would come to town, I had tickets backstage. I could go to the workshops. I mean, I was having a...
You had tickets. We used to sneak in.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Janet Hicks and I, she taught me how to sneak in, you know, to the different dance concerts. We just walked in like part of the...
Always.
Like we were part of the dancers, you know. So
and they would... And literally, they'd seen me so many times. They would...
Go.
You know, they knew me.
stop. Anyway, we've got to go, everyone. I'm Kate Thompson. This has been Kate Thompson Live. Sean S. Glover is in there laughing at us. You know, listen, this is All Home with Glenda Taylor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenda.
Okay. I mean, your book, Black America Cry.
Phenomenal.
And the Jella Musso's drum. Yes. She is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And thank you for introducing me to Sophia Stewart. You know, we're going to be keeping people up to date on that particular case.
Yes.
Byron Stoner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Every time you're with us. Yeah, Glenda? We have.
She's a very interesting, creative person.
Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely. Listen, we have to go. Thank you very much. We'll talk again. I'm Kate Thompson. This has been Kate Thompson Live.